Hello and welcome to another Linguistics Career Cast, the podcast devoted to exploring careers for linguists outside academia. I'm your host, Laurel Sutton. This episode is an audio version of a virtual panel held at the Linguistics Career Launch in the summer of 2024. The video of this presentation is available at the Linguistics Career Launch YouTube channel. Links to the presentation materials and to other resources mentioned are in the show notes. This episode of Linguistics Career Cast is generously sponsored by Amazon Science. This episode is titled Jobs in Tech for Qualitative Researchers and Social Scientists. Our moderator, Alfonso Sanchez Moya, guides a discussion with panelists Lex Connolly and Jyoti Iyer on how backgrounds in linguistics and social sciences can shape innovation and drive meaningful change in tech companies. In this session, you'll learn how to utilize skills and expertise in analysis, critical thinking, and understanding human behavior to impact tech and technology. And there's practical advice on breaking into these fields and advancing your career in the rapidly evolving tech landscape. Topics discussed include qualitative research, job search, networking, transferable job skills, reframing, language context, language bias, career transition, and job descriptions.
Welcome to this panel about jobs in tech for qualitative researchers and social scientists. I'm Alfonso Sanchez Moya, as I said before. I'll be the moderator for this panel. A little bit about me. I'm currently working at Amazon. I'm a machine learning, artificial intelligence data linguist. I've been contributing to the expansion of Alexa, a language model in Spanish mostly, but also in Portuguese and more recently Arabic, like a little bit less in Arabic. As pretty much many linguists in tech, I'm also part of the LM production in you know, language-wise. And on top of this, I also have this interest in love towards teaching, and I also do some action professorship at the University of Massachusetts Boston. So we have with us two wonderful linguists. I'm going to get started with Lex. We have Lex Connolly. They are a linguist and social scientist in the tech industry, working as a linguistic engineering team lead at Meta. They hold a PhD from the Departments of Linguistics and Sexual Diversity Studies at the University of Toronto. And they have extensive experience in both quantitative and qualitative research methodologies. And, you know, linguistic expertise is rooted in variationist social linguistics, social cultural linguistics, linguistics anthropology, and with the particular emphasis on the intersections of language, gender, and identity. Welcome, Lex. It's a pleasure to have you here. And we also have Jyoti Iyer. This is, I'm super glad to introduce you to Jyoti because she's an LCL 21 alumna. We met there for the first time, and I'm just so happy to have you here again. She currently works in the intersection of conversation design and product management, and started doing so while finishing her PhD in linguistics at the UMass Amherst. Before that, she did an MA in linguistics and a BA in English, both of them in India. She's currently based in Toronto, and she's working remotely for a startup headquartered in the US called Rosie AI. Her linguistics background is mostly theory, semantics, pragmatics, and syntax, with some corpus work in the mix, which somewhat challenges the category of qualitative research, which is something that I'm sure we will be talking about as well today. So just some housekeeping here. So we'll have a battery of questions that I'll be taking for both our panelists. I would like this to be more of a conversation between the three of us. And of course, we're excited to get your questions. Trying to keep it a little bit organized, if you're happy with this, we'll be taking questions at the end. We'll make sure that we actually book like 15 minutes at the very end of the session so that we can take the questions that you can, of course, share with us in the chat if you want. So are we ready? All right. Okay, cool. We're getting set. I think When I was kind of preparing for this panel, I was trying to reflect on questions that I've been getting over the years. And for many LCL participants, I think that landing a job in tech seems like a very complex task, especially when we come from, or participants come from, a qualitative background. That's the reason why I would like us to start with, kind of the beginning of this process, like the job hunting, like interviewing, taking into account that the three of us, you both had like more of a qualitative background with a little bit of controversies there, as we mentioned before. But I would like to know, how was this process for you? And Lex, you can get going if you want.
Sure, Alfonso. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to kick it off. So in terms of you mean just sort of the job seeking process in general, like getting onto the job market for the first time. So this is interesting because definitely there are aspects of being a more qualitatively oriented linguist that came into play there. But I think when I think back on my first entrance into the job market, I think what was mostly informing a lot of my experience, my affect during that time was coming out of the period of being an exhausted graduate student as well. And just finishing my graduate studies, right? So the process of kind of simultaneously wrapping up a dissertation, closing a particular chapter, and then figuring out how I'm going to open the new one. I think for me, a huge piece of support that I had during that time was actually turning to other linguists. So it's especially exciting to get to be here and to connect with folks and to see so many familiar faces as well. Because it was linguists who had already made that transition who provided me with really crucial support during that time, not just in terms of like informational interviews, right? Getting a sense of what other folks from similar linguistic backgrounds to me were doing, but also thinking about it from maybe the perspective of translation almost. I think that transitioning from an academic environment to an industry environment, it's a question of genre, which I think is very familiar to those of us who come from qualitative backgrounds. It's just thinking about how can I reframe this into how can I do a little audience design here, basically, right? And so definitely other linguists were instrumental, were so crucial in providing me with a lot of the terminology that I needed and telling me how they talked about their work, how they contextualized their qualitative experiences. And I'd love to chat about more, maybe some specific instances of that if folks are interested, but I'd like to hear what Jyoti thinks as well. But I would say for me, that's kind of a at least off the top of my head, what was top of mind at the time for sure.
Thank you.
Awesome. So Lex, I'm sure you get this a lot, but what a great name you have for the field you're in. But yeah, as far as my job hunt, I really have to, this really is how it went. I definitely owe a lot to having the opportunity to participate in LCL, and it really did give me a structured way to get a lot of what you were talking about, Lex, like really being able to connect with people who had already done that transition from academia to something else before, especially tech. And I think as far as like I also felt it really resonated with me when you said it's a process of translation, and especially because I'm in this, I imagine there are lots of people here who might have a theoretical background in linguistics like me, and you're like, am I really doing qualitative work? I don't know, what does that even mean? So I think it was useful for me to really look at the binary as quantitative versus non-quantitative, and that was just because that reflected more the broad landscape of jobs that I saw as available or accessible to me, and it was useful for me to really say, I'm not doing quant because that's not what I did in my academic life anyway. And it seemed like there would be a process of upskilling, learning a whole new set of skills that I didn't really want to do, in part because I was also exhausted, but also because, the more I talk to people, and again, like if you have one takeaway, you're gonna hear this so much throughout LCL, but talk to people, it's very useful to for so many things, but also specifically to develop your own confidence. So I at some point I was like, okay, you know what? I didn't do a PhD in linguistics to then kind of start from scratch, basically. I didn't want to end up feeling like I was at the same place I was after my MA in linguistics. I feel like that would have been a backwards move. And so I kind of consciously was like, okay, it looks like qualitative is the place I would fit better. And then it was useful for me to think about the skills I had as, you know, outside of the labels and more just like, well, I guess this is a label too. The label I latched onto was analytical skills. And that was easier to, it was easier using that label to understand who I could communicate with. So if a job description was very Python, 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 I was like, you know, let whatever, I'll find something that maybe is more suited to me. And that kind of helped sifting it out.
Interesting. Absolutely. I think I couldn't agree more with what you're sharing. I actually resonated a lot. And actually, during the office hours yesterday, I think people I had the pleasure to talk with, this is something I actually placed a great emphasis on. It's this idea of transitioning and translating, and something that it's very interesting. And this is actually going to be the bridge for our next question, but something that we actually do, I think we kind of know to do very well from the qualitative side of things, is just this idea of reframing things. Like I was sharing this with people yesterday, but as part of my PhD thesis, I had a very strong component of metaphor analysis. Metaphor is just, you know, like one of the key vehicles to actually reframe things and reframe realities. So to me, that was actually essential. That's not something I was aware of when I was before LCL 21. So learning the new jargon, learning the genres, as Lex mentioned before, that's something that I didn't have at all. Very much used to my academic context. And that's why a program like this one worked out to my benefit, just to try to understand how should I be reframing things. So building on that, when we think of, for me, that was a key thing, like as a qualitative linguist, the ability to reframe was key. Jyoti, can you think of different skills from your qualitative background or like we've mentioned that this is like the binaries was sometimes problematic, but from that side of the spectrum, the qualitative side of things, can you think of skills that actually were particularly useful for you in your you know current position or previous positions? Or actually, I can also link it to something that we can talk about it as well, but is there something as a qualitative linguist that you think makes you stand out?
Yes. Okay. So, great question. Let me focus on that first part actually. First, so I think that reframing and so on. How something that worked very well for me was actually saying what specifically I did in my academic work, which is a little bit counterintuitive. I didn't think anybody would want to hear about adverbs. Or you know, I don't know. I don't want to go into details of my dissertation here either. But I think it was something that seems to have worked in potential, you know, in conversations with potential job providers was the ability to tell the story of what my work was and being excited about it, actually. And I wasn't excited about my work for a very long time, and I thought I would have to, you know, fake it and all that. But, you know, the truth be told, by the time I got to the final dissertation writing stage, the excitement about it had come back. And so it was really like the instead of saying, you know, here is what my qualitative skills are and so on, I could give examples of how I did things and what I did. So for example, I did on the advice of my dissertation advisor, actually, I did a component of corpus research, and you know, my work was on Hindi, so the corpus was very, it was what it was. It wasn't like a beautiful annotated corpus that I could just, you know, filter out insights from. It was mostly just a repository of sentences. And so even talking about finding a corpus and finding it to be very messy, dealing with that challenge, that resonated with people. I didn't expect it to. And then, you know, being able to describe what is your data, because that's a bit of a mystery. I think when people look at linguists, they're like, okay, but what do you do? What does your data look like? And so I think just being able to describe, you know, if you work in theory, you often are one of the informants for the data yourself. And, you know, I think just owning that and understanding what that means, and understanding that that also is an established methodology. Mm. That's not a lack of methodology. Mm. I think that's useful. So whatever it is that you did, whether it was, you know, you asked yourself and your mom for judgments and that was it, or you did, you know, a structured interview with, you know, five different people, or you ran an experiment, or, you know, you did whatever it is that you did. I think being able to just say what it is, in sort of somewhat more layman's language is good. And I think that would really help you in your job search.
Thank you, Jyoti. Lex, any skills from your qualitative background that you think were or have been or are particularly useful for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, this maybe builds a little bit on what Jyoti was already saying, but I think as linguists in general, in particular qualitative linguists who are able to kind of sit down and look at, shall we say, like a series of utterances, like a particular interaction, and focus on it with granular laser-like detail, that's something that we kind of take for granted. Not everybody actually is able to do that. Not everybody wants to do that, in all fairness, but like not everybody also necessarily thinks systemically, I think, when it comes to language. And so particularly when you're working in tech and you're working in the development of language technologies in particular, that kind of systemic view, the understanding of language as an interconnected series of parts that are in mutual constitution with one another, I think that's an especially incisive view that's missing in a lot of conversations about language technologies. A lot of computer scientists are very, you know, incredibly creative and enthusiastic and passionate about how to model language data, but don't necessarily have the background in linguistics to be able to do the kind of creative, feature integrations or evaluative framework development that linguists can. So in my role now, I oversee a team that's responsible for large language model evaluation and alignment. And so a lot of the work that we do is figuring out answers to wild questions. Like sometimes we'll be asked something so open-ended, like, you know, which model is more natural than the other? And to a linguist, that's a wild question, right? Like, what does it mean for language to even be natural in the first place? How do you make naturalness something that's gradable, right? And so I think having that particular analytic framework, that comfort, that ease with language data, makes those tasks a lot more, you know, achievable and also very compelling, right? So I feel like just having that enthusiasm for digging into messy language data and making something concrete out of it, that I think is something that is a real edge. Yeah. Oh, and I see Jyoti has a hand up, so maybe she has some more thoughts to add to that. I'd love to hear it.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, Lex, so I will wait till you're finished.
No, that's pretty much all I wanted to say is just like, yeah, being able to really kind of take that analytical lens and that research focus and apply it to, I mean, I think it's just kind of pointing it in a different direction. But really, I think ultimately in the end, you know, linguists will practice linguistics wherever they go, right? We can practice it in academia, we can practice it in tech. We can practice it in industry, but I do think in particular that view is an asset. But Jyoti, I'd love to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, so I was talking somewhat generally because I was trying to just read the room and figure out where to pitch this. But since you kind of brought up some specifics about your current job, so the evaluative framework is something so important, and I'm realizing if I had to sort of describe one the top skill from the qualitative background that is really, really so transferable. And I'm only realizing it in the last 6 months or so. It's being able to create test cases, testing scenarios, whatever you do. So the work I'm doing right now is so my company in a way consumes the LLM. I mean, we do a whole lot of other things, a lot of configurations and setup and so on top of the LLM. Which then is it's all in service of solving some or the other customer problem. So, there's an insurance company and customers want to be able to ask questions about their own policy, for example. And so what we do is we're in the business of building all that infrastructure above the LLM layer. And so rather than the questions that you get, Lex, what I get is I need to be able to create testing scenarios that would highlight, that would kind of break our experience and push it to the limits, and so we can find them and fix them as bugs. So one example is things that you might not think of if you're coming at it sort of new is. Can the system, as it has been set up, understand different variations on an input? If you're asking someone to enter their account number or their credit card number or something, and I work in conversation design, so like I didn't say this, but this is in the context of interacting with a chat bot, for example, or say on a phone experience, and so like. Can the system understand when you enter just your credit card number? Can it also understand if it's that entity plus a bunch of other stuff? Like, what if you say, "Hey, this is my credit card number, colon, blah." And so coming up with they're often simple test cases, but it's very important to have a certain comprehensive approach to that. And having worked with negative data, ungrammatical sentences, that can really be helpful in trying to come up with things to break a system.
And Josie, if you don't mind, I'm just going to take it there because it's very interesting what you mentioned to me, especially this ungrammatical things that you may just find there. I think something that for me was very relevant, and this is also connected to what Lex said before. It's this idea of I think as a qualitative person myself, I think we are actually very much used to seeing what's around data, the context of data. I would have never imagined having to use my skills to provide very specific accounts of how two different verbs were used depending on the different context, the communicative context they were used. I had to do that drawing from my Spanish skills, like L1 Spanish, but also as a linguist and actually having the ability to check on a corpus of Spanish in Latin America just to make sure that that was also the case there. So the tools there, the contextuality that we have, and last but not least, the criticality. I think qualitative people, we approach data very critically, and I think the three of us are currently doing a lot of LLM stuff. LLM, it's new, it's data creation. There are so many biases that many people that put language there carry with them. And I think the moment you, as a qualitative person, take it and just see what's going on there, I think that's, to me, that has been like also fascinating, especially thinking of a colleague next to me that maybe less trained on qualitative stuff that was unable to see. So that said, I want to transition a little bit about we promised like 15 minutes for questions. So maybe we're going to get, I would like you to talk about something that I don't think it's talked about enough. And I actually think that LCL21 was fantastic in that regard. The three of us finished a PhD and transitioned, which is something Alex said before, or changed from academia, maybe having planned to stay in academia forever, into industry. Can you tell me a little bit more about how that emotional process was for you? Like, and I know this is a huge question, but how is that for you? And then maybe we can take that for the questions as well. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts. So Lex, if you want to go.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. Thanks for this question, Alfonso. Honestly, like, the first word that comes to mind for me is just there was a grief, right? There definitely was a grief period. I think not even necessarily because I was invested in academia as a career path. I think probably by that point, probably by around my last year, maybe last 2 years of my PhD program, I kind of had settled into the fact that maybe continuing in academia was not how I personally wanted to practice linguistics. So I was very curious about what other opportunities were out there. But it was nevertheless, it was a huge change, right? I mean, it was like academia is, you know, it's its own ecosystem, right? The, you know, you have ways of doing things that are very familiar to you. It's cyclical as well, in a way that I think had come to be very familiar and maybe comforting in some ways as well. But at the same time, like I think that it did give me the opportunity to really settle into the realization also that my identity as a linguist was distinct from my identity as an academic. And that academia was how I had up until that point practiced linguistics and you know, delightfully so. And that came with lots of other really exciting opportunities, like getting to teach linguistics as well, which I was very, very passionate about and still, you know, try to find creative ways to make a part of my professional life now as well. But so I think about my time in graduate studies for linguistics as, you know, my time of really connecting with what it meant for me to be a linguist, right? What my framework for understanding language is. And I think that has been a huge asset as well, transitioning into industry, because again, as a, you know, as a qualitative oriented person, we've been talking about this, I think, a little bit so far, but I think that I really had a deep feeling that language use is a consequential thing. It's a contextually mediated thing. I had a lot of questions and concerns, frankly, about what it means to algorithmize our conversations, right? How you know, what the impact of that could be societally for specific language communities. And so I think there was something also empowering for me as well about getting to decide, you know, maybe I'll take a more direct role in moving into this particular space instead. So it was mixed, I guess, is the short version. It was mixed. Yeah, it was both, you know, incredibly challenging and maybe recognizing what I needed to let go of, but also a lot of excitement as well in terms of, you know, what that also made room for.
Thank you, Lex. Jyoti, something to add to that. How was for you? And I know this is a very challenging and long question, but how was that for you?
I mean, okay, so I don't know how to start, really. let me start from where I am now. I think I feel very happy about where I am right now. And it's actually really nice to say that out loud. And I think that academia was just not for me. And it took me a while to realize that I don't think that I was temperamentally suited to it. Really, like, I you know, if I had known better, maybe I wouldn't have even gone and done a PhD. But you know, having finished it and having gotten a job in industry and stuff, I feel much better and more aligned with what I want now. I mean, I do love linguistics, and I mean, one might debate whether I'm doing, you know, as much linguistics anymore, but I do think that I'm working with language and with the way that conversations flow. On a day-to-day basis, and I really enjoy that a lot. As far as the transition itself, it was incredibly difficult, and I mean, especially managing the time and so on, and emotionally quite draining. But also, you know, I wanted to be open about one of the facets of my particular journey, which is why I was like laughing awkwardly. It's like, you know, it feels awkward to say this on a recorded call, but my PhD took 10 years. And you know, so yeah, I joined in 2013. I graduated officially in 2023. So I see there are some older dissertators in the audience. Welcome. So you know, there was, and you know, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but often when PhDs take very long, it's because of a systemic lack of support, hostility even. And I, you know, it there are lots of things that go on to either help you get out of that or keep you in that. And I had a mix of both, to be honest. Like, there were a bunch of negative things, but there were also very positive things, including in my case, a really good dissertation advisor. And so yeah, I mean, I had also tried, it's probably relevant to say I had tried out working for the union at my university for a couple of years. And it was, I mean, I was an international student, and I'm sure this is relatable to a lot of us here as well. It was really a make or break. Like, I had to get some source of employment in order to stay in the States, and that had to be on campus because that was what my visa allowed. So within the bounds of those constraints, I did what I could, and I actually got very interested in that kind of job, and I thought maybe I would go into organizing, and then that didn't seem like a great fit for me either, although I have no regrets about having tried that out. And so you know, to be honest, like but when I got to LCL, and again, this feels like I'm a plant, but like this actually happened. Like, I really didn't know where I was going. If I hadn't encountered a group of supportive linguists at the time, I may have been doing union organizing now, which would have been a very different kind of place to end up.
Interesting. Thank you, Jyoti. I think I'm going to wrap it up there. Like, I feel there is uncertainty in the process, not necessarily knowing where we're going. Grief is a part of it, and it was for me as well. And something that Lex also mentioned, which to me was very interesting, is this cyclical nature of things. So the understanding this is a cycle, and I'm not going to go beyond here like a lot, but what happened with me is that I saw academia at that time in my life was not providing what I needed. And that's the simple reason why I decided to explore adventures elsewhere. And it's true that after a while, I actually realized that I love teaching. There is nothing I can do against that. And that's why I try to find solutions to that as well. And that's what I'm currently doing, right? So to me, it's important just to get this idea of the hybrid nature of things sometimes, of psychical life experiences. And I think with that, I'm going to be giving you the room because otherwise we can just talk forever. Do we have questions that you would like to share with us? You can raise hands. You can just, I see people have been sharing questions in the chat, but thank you both, Lex, Jyoti. Let's hear from people if got questions, comments, or things that you may want to share with everyone.
Hi, thank you for this talk. I've been really interested in this, and I was really, really excited to see this topic on the sort of roster, as it were. My question is, I'm interested in this field, and I've been sort of trying to get my foot in the door. Are there specific, like, more entry-level job titles or things that I should be looking for if I'm interested in this field?
Oh, sure, no problem. Yeah, thanks for this question, Kate. I would say I mentioned this in the chat as well, but I think the term prompt engineer is floating around quite a bit. It's become a bit of a Swiss Army knife term almost. Different organizations use it to mean different things, but largely it is it's within the domain of language model evaluation and alignment. There might be a little bit of a conversational design aspect to it as well. But that, I think, it has become a pretty common entry-level title that you'll see out there quite a bit, and that typically folks who are looking for prompt engineers do really value a linguistic skill set as well, just because it does edge into the domain of evaluating language data and also occasionally engaging with the models as well through the test cases as well that Jyoti was talking about earlier. Kind of engaging and trying to push the models. So that's one job title I would encourage folks to keep an eye out for, in particular, is a prompt engineer.
Mm. Jyoti, you want to go?
Yeah, it's so as far as what I know more about it, until last year, even it was easier to find conversation design jobs which were called that. It was always a little hard. It doesn't show up on online searches as well, but it's changing now. I think what Lex said is really helpful, and we're kind of in a transition moment in this industry. So if you're interested in things to do with large language models, their evaluation and their application, like conversation design, is more on the application side, building applications, apps, you know, and services off of these models, then yeah, I think I would agree. Look for prompt engineering type of things, but also keep your eye open for people who are in conversation design and reach out to them, because I think that may be more, it may yield you more than just searching for the jobs.
Thank you both. And I think I'm going to link that question, Kate, with something that we get in the chat, like where are these jobs and what are they called? Who hires people like us? I think the three of us here, like I can speak for myself, but I didn't have a quantitative background at all. I was sharing this yesterday, but I was the type of person who would actually get terrified at the computer just stopping, and then I would just turn it off and turn it on, and that's it. I actually have the impression that many people I've met, I mean, we are actually representative of big techs like Meta, Amazon, but also like different companies that are not necessarily that big, but have like very interesting products as well. I have the impression that something we shouldn't do is just be stuck by the job descriptions. And this is something you'll be learning a lot from during this program. But I always like showing this example. All my interviews at Amazon, I used examples from a qualitative background. As I said before, I did a lot of metaphor analysis. I was using examples of conversations with Alexa that I had at home using metaphorical expressions, and I would bring them all the time in the interviews. And of course, that's something that from a natural language understanding perspective, those expressions were not, and I'm not really talking about hidden metaphors, like metaphors we live by, metaphors that are everywhere. And it was interesting to see how that was very interesting for hiring managers and interviewers, especially thinking of how I could contribute to that. So I think we're great examples of that. And I think the qualifications, Makina is just saying this, but I think we share that, right? So we do have a background in social science, in qualitative / mixed method linguistics. Is there anything you want to add to that, both Lex or Jyoti?
Jyoti, do you have any thoughts?
I could maybe yeah, spend so, something. So in conversation design particularly, I think someone maybe asked about entry-level stuff as well. I'm not sure, but conversation design kind of is a field that is very accommodating of people from here and there, different walks of life. So okay, this is going to be a weird thing to say, but what was the question? What qualifications are employers looking for? So in something like chatbot design and evaluation stuff, something that employers are definitely looking for is any kind of online presence, a website, a WordPress, whatever. I have a WordPress, with some sort of case study, basically some demonstration that you know what your target field is. Like if you're applying, what, and this is probably something that will apply to some other fields as well. Not all fields require you to have a portfolio or anything. And don't get intimidated by the word portfolio. Literally, like one tiny thing with two paragraphs, which is like, hey, I used, whatever. Let's say you're flying on some airline like tomorrow, and you have to go to that chatbot and chat with, because you have actually some need as a customer, and you realize the chatbot is amazing or it's really bad, and you can write up a little evaluation. That I think is something that will help you get your foot in the door. And that's I think a concern for a lot of people present probably, which is how do I even get to the interview? Because once you're at the interview, then you can talk about your research and you can talk about all that stuff. But I think having a little bit of presence and having a LinkedIn that suggests that you are appropriate for that field will probably help you.
That's very interesting. Thank you, Lex. There is this question here, and I'm not sure if this bumping means that you don't want to talk about it or you just want to briefly talk about it. It is true what the organizers Emily said here is that we will be having a session on the ethical use of AI next week. So I encourage you all to be there. Lex, is there any thought that you want to share with us about that?
Yes. The reason I wanted to bump this question, because I think it's a very good one, and it's also one that I get a lot when I talk with other linguists about, what it means to work in tech and what it means to work in the development of generative AI language technology specifically. So it was something that was really top of mind for me, and it was something that I was exploring a lot, and I'm still kind of exploring a lot as I, continue to work in the industry. But I mean, I just would maybe want to circle it back to what I said earlier about, linguists, particularly qualitative linguists, recognizing language use as something that is very consequential. And I think that that's a perspective that's deeply necessary in the domain of any language technology development. But so I guess what I would say, maybe I don't know, words of wisdom or, little boost that I would give folks who are curious about this field is just to maybe think about how you can practice linguistic advocacy in this space as well. So what does it mean as somebody who recognizes language to be consequential, who sees the ways that these technologies could fit into our daily lives, how they could change our communicative practices, how could you maybe be a strategically stuck cog, for example, right? Like how could the perspective of language as grounded in human communication, I think that's what linguists bring to AI, is the understanding of language as something that is in a lot of ways inseparable from humans, inseparable from the communities that use it. And so there are a lot of really incredible tech organizations out there who are really devoted to taking this kind of very, very, integrity first perspective for folks to get involved with. But I think that definitely a necessary companion piece to working in the industry is also doing your part to deflate AI hype, right? To be realistic about what this technology is, what it's capable of, right? We have a scientific, this is our wheelhouse, right? Like this is, we're talking about language technologies specifically here, right? So I guess I would just say I don't think that they're incompatible. And in fact, I think linguists are in an especially well-suited position to say, hey, the future of this technology is basically having it think with us rather than for us, right? It cannot, it should not replace us. And here's why, from a linguistic perspective, it wouldn't even make sense anyways, right? So just wanted to throw that out there as well, because and thanks to Sydney for this question.
Cool. Thank you so much. I actually think we are on time now. I think I'm gonna take this final thought. Like our role as qualitative people, in bringing that awareness, and just something that you mentioned, Lex, to me, it's beautiful. It's just thinking with us instead of for us. I think that's something qualitative people, we can do very well. And that's how I feel we are actually very valuable at different settings, not only in tech, but elsewhere. So I think I'm going to end it here, because I think that's a fantastic way to do that with Lex's comment. I'm excited for the questions. I hope you enjoyed it. Yes, Primus. Oh, Lex, if you want to repeat that, it's actually your thing. So go for it, because I really liked it, this idea that you mentioned.
Great question. Can I repeat what I said? can I repeat all that? So the too long didn't read version, I'll give you the SparkNotes version just one more time, which was, I think that, linguists are bringing a really crucial perspective of language as, you know, grounded in the communities that use it, right? And are, I think, especially well positioned to advocate for AI as being something that is used to think with us rather than for us, right? And so be a stuck cog in the machine, basically, is the point I was trying to make there.
Put that on a t-shirt.
All right. So thank you so much. Thank you, Lex. Thank you, Jyoti, for taking the invitation to be here with us. It's been a wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I encourage everyone to share your questions, thoughts, or things that you may have with us, whatever the channel you prefer, but we are open to get discussions that we got from here. And I think we can wrap it up here. Thank you so much. And I really hope that you enjoy the rest of your program. See you around.
Linguistics Career Launch is an ongoing nonprofit project currently led by volunteers that works to educate students, faculty, administrators, and industry employers about the value of linguists in business, government, nonprofit, and tech. The LCL has held two online boot camps during which attendees were able to learn from and interact with career linguists, as well as gain practical experience in career management skills. Videos of all our recorded sessions are available on our YouTube channel. You can get in touch at linguisticscareerlaunch@gmail.com.